Hey there, welcome to the Student to CEO podcast. I'm your host, Ashley Mason. We're talking to entrepreneurs who launched their business at a young age and they're now killing the game. Tune in to our episodes as these guests spill the dirt on taking that leap into entrepreneurship just like they did. Hey everyone, welcome to today's episode of the Student to CEO podcast. I'm thrilled to have Peter Cazadoy joining us today as the guest. Peter is an Inc. 5000 serial entrepreneur, TEDx speaker, author of Honest to Greatness, and business coach who works with organizations and their leaders to help them overcome self-limiting beliefs and use honesty to achieve greatness. His articles on leadership and entrepreneurship have been featured in Forbes, Inc., HuffPost, PR Daily, and more. He holds a BA in economics from Brandeis University and an MBA from Columbia Business School. Peter, thanks for joining us today.
It's my pleasure, Ashley.
Absolutely. And I'd love for you to start off by sharing with our listeners what you do and what led you there.
Yeah, well, now it's sort of I'm sort of a jack of all trades. I've got my fingers in a lot of different pies, which is how I like it. Actually, you know, every time I watch Shark Tank and the sharks get so upset that entrepreneurs aren't focused on one thing, I always say to myself, like, that's crazy talk. I mean, I would never have learned the breadth and depth of what I know now if I hadn't worked in different businesses, started different companies, gone and done different projects. That to me is the mark of a successful life. So kind of all over the place. But it all started, Ashley, back in right out of college. I actually was a very competitive figure skater in my younger years. It's how I met my wife and what got me started in business, ironically enough. And when I was in college, I was working for a guy, an entrepreneur, who owned several figure skating stores, retail stores. And I was starting to manage them. And I said to him, you know, everything I'm learning at school, you know, all the elective courses I could, I took at the business school and the business programs. I said, you know, I'm learning all this cool stuff. Why don't we take these four stores and go national? You know, you already had a footprint in the Northeast and I saw a lot of potential in it. Figure skating is the most watched Olympic sport by far and was doing really well back in the mid 2000s. So he said, yeah, that'd be great. Come on down. So unfortunately, that was the one of the first times life stepped in and slapped me across the face because I graduated in 2008, which you know, everyone knows what happened then. And so the floor kind of fell out from underneath us. And so being the enterprising entrepreneurs that we are, we thought, you know what would be super awesome to do in a situation where the economy's not doing well? Start a reality television show about figure skating. And so, you know, I don't know what in the world we were possibly thinking at the time. It seemed like a good idea. So, you know, I think we just looked around, saw, you know, Dancing with the Stars had taken off and it was like, who the heck likes ballroom? Nobody, right? I mean, figure skating, again, most watched Olympic sport, really popular to do. So we put together a team of videographers, sound people, lighting, and shot this pilot. Went tens of thousands of dollars into debt only to figure out that you didn't need to do any of that in order to pitch a TV show. And as we got to pitching, we were like, people were like, figure skating? I don't know. I mean, and mind you, we were just coming out of the recession. So it wasn't exactly a, you know, an opportunistic time for people to be buying anything, you know, show or otherwise. So we had this these teams together and we thought to ourselves, well, now we're in debt. We need to go make money. So let's take this video work we have and try to pivot it into commercial work and make money, right? Dollars, cents, be a good idea being in business. So we literally actually started Gem Advertising, my advertising agency, as a video production company. We were making $800 television commercials for local car dealers, which is exactly as glamorous as it sounds. And I just remember thinking to myself, gosh, if we could make more $800 television commercials, like we'd be rich, right? We could be millionaires. Well, obviously, you know, I hadn't taken that many math classes at Brandeis because if I had, I would have realized that it would have taken a tremendous amount of work and there was just no way, right? I mean, it wasn't going to happen. Even if it did, and we were able to shoot that many commercials, it would have been a miserable, soul-sucking experience. So we started pivoting. And at the time, we were getting hired by other marketing agencies, you know, full-service agencies. And they were just terrible. I mean, they would overcharge clients and they would miss deadlines and their strategies weren't that good. And we were like, well, we can do this, right? Classic entrepreneur thinking, like, well, we can do that, right? We can do that better. The good thing about thinking we can do it better is that we go and do. The bad thing about thinking you can do it better is you actually have to prove you can do it better. So, you know, we kind of slapped a new label on ourselves, said, okay, we're a full service agency now, and went out to market with that message. And that's when we got our first kind of bigger client. And I'll hold that story for later because it's a good one too. And the rest was history, as they say.
Amazing. So you started basically going into this venture in terms of like the figure skating company and commercials and all this stuff directly out of college.
Yeah, it was like a story of pivots.
Yeah, totally. And especially as you mentioned, I mean, with 2008, you're really not left with many choices. So it's kind of like you had to be able to identify an opportunity that you could pursue and then adapt accordingly.
Exactly. I mean, I'll tell you the good thing about starting a company in 2008 is that everything that's happened this year with the pandemic has just been a non-factor because we know how to do this. We know how to do scrappy. We know how to do cutting costs. We know how to do pivoting. So, you know, it's sort of like there is a resiliency muscle that I have been surprised to find within myself. I mean, it's taken 12 years to develop and there have been many downs to teach me. But you know, that is something I wish on all entrepreneurs, that they realize that as resilient as they think they are, there's a long way to go. And by the way, that journey is a gift that keeps on giving.
I love that perspective. And I've actually had a few other podcast guests on here who actually did the same thing. They started their businesses during their recession because they also graduated from college during that time. And what they kind of realized was that they were left without any job opportunities, and any jobs that they applied for, they were beat out by people who had years and years of experiences because they had bigger roles and were laid off from their companies and whatnot. So they ended up starting their companies and growing from there. And so I think it's admirable anyone who's been able to start a company during a recession and still be thriving today.
Yeah. I mean, none of it's easy, right? And it's funny you mentioned that. I just wrote an article yesterday for a publication about the fact that, you know, 2008, that crisis, this crisis going on now in 2020 with the pandemic, these are like the bumpers in a bowling lane. And we can look at them as being in the way, but really they're guiding the ball down the alley in the right direction. We just have to be wise enough to like realize that they are ushering us towards where we should go, not preventing us from going someplace that it probably isn't in what I call honest alignment in the first place with who you really are and what you really want. And that ties into, you know, what my book Honest to Greatness is all about.
I love that analogy because I think that's something to keep in mind, especially now. I mean, I know of college students who just graduated and now they're like, what do I do? And so they're starting to figure out different opportunities they can pursue. And so just that whole bowling alley scenario, just thinking about the fact that this pandemic and the recession is just guiding people to where they are meant to be rather than being in the way.
That's right.
And when you pivoted from being that commercial production company to the marketing agency, what was that like?
Well, you know, in true entrepreneur fashion, it's a light switch in our minds. And of course, you know, we needed time for the market to catch up. I mean, we had built a sort of name for ourselves here in Southern Connecticut. And then we had to go to market and say, hey, you know, we're adding on these new things and here's why you should give us a chance. So at the time we were doing lots of filming, as I said earlier, and we were shooting videos for a local college and interviewing their students and putting those videos up online for them. And one day the VP of marketing calls and says, hey, I think we're going to go with a full service agency. Would you like to pitch? You know, do you even have the resources to handle an account like ours? I mean, it was a $1 million account and it needed design, social media management, and you know, all kinds of stuff. And so we kind of put the phone on mute and we were like, all right, well, you know, look around. Do we have any of these resources? No. Do we have a graphic designer on staff? No. Do we have a dedicated account man? No. We didn't have any of the pieces. So you know, we picked the phone back up and we said, yeah, absolutely. We'll pitch. We'll see you at you know, whatever time you need us there, we'll be there. And so we did. So we get to the pitch and at the end of the pitch, we play this video of students that we had interviewed and we reveal their tagline that was going to be the centerpiece of the whole campaign. And the president looks down on it and the room goes quiet. And suddenly she looks back up. She says, where did you get this? I've been looking for something like this for years. And we were tempted to say, well, we're the biggest bunch of geniuses you've ever met in your entire life. That's how. But we didn't say that because it wouldn't have been true. What was true was that we heard it directly from their students. Their own students told us what the college was all about. And we used that as the bedrock of their campaign. And that was the first time that we really got keen to this idea of brutal honesty, authenticity, transparency. And from that point on, Ashley, you know, as we worked with folks from, you know, local startups and colleges up to, you know, Warren Buffett himself, I became fascinated with this idea of the role that honesty plays, both organizational honesty and honesty in the leadership, in results. And in fact, I was fascinated by two things. One is how well honesty worked for the marketing of the companies that we went to. But I was equally fascinated by, you know, some companies would take our growth strategies and just like crush it and get a massive ROI, and others blew up on the launch pad. I mean, we could just never get them out of the gate. They would get embroiled in like politics and infighting and crap, right? And I always saw it as, well, those executives must be a big bunch of dummies. But, you know, of course, that's not true, right? Any executive that rises to any position of power is a smart individual. What I actually came to in the end, Ashley, was that executives who couldn't get out of their own way, who kind of tripped up their own organizations, were fundamentally dishonest on one level or another. Either dishonest about what was going on in the world and how trends were shifting and society was changing, what was going on with the people around them, whether that was the experiences and insights of their fellow executives or what their frontline employees were thinking or what their customers were saying, or they failed to get honest with themselves, you know, that their own biases and self-limiting beliefs were leading them astray and they didn't even know it. I was shocked to come out of college and I took all these business courses. I was like, yeah, this makes a whole lot of sense. Like numbers, spreadsheets, dollars, cents, very sensical. I was shocked to see how much personal bias and ego gets in the way. And, you know, for instance, I mean, I can't tell you how many executives we've worked with that are like, oh, I'll tell you, this is the exact conversation. We need to do billboards. Okay, why do we need to do billboards? Well, I just think, you know, a lot of people see billboards and it's, you know, it's a great thing and it puts our brand out there. Okay, well, I mean, your target market's probably not going to drive and see that billboard. You know, they're mainly digital, younger folks, blah, 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 whatever. Yeah, but we should do it. Okay, where do you want a billboard? I want a billboard on that highway right there. Why would you put it there? There's a very expensive place. There are other places. Well, because that's, you know, halfway between my house and my place of work and I want to see it every day. Now we got to it. Right? It's like, if you want to do marketing for yourself, that's totally fine. But let's be honest about what this really is, because otherwise we're just lying to ourselves about, you know, what it takes to have a proper communications and marketing program geared towards the only people who matter, which are your customers.
Absolutely. And I love the story that you shared about looking at your team and realizing that you didn't have the resources that this college was looking for, but you did it anyway. And that's one thing that I really love to say is my favorite quote by Marie Forleo, everything is figure outable. And also people need to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. So I love that you and the team members that you had at the time really took that leap and did something that you didn't really have the resources for, but you made it work amazingly.
Well, we knew we would. I mean, and so, you know, the savvy listeners will think to themselves, this is someone who did a TED talk and wrote a book about honesty, and yet he didn't have those resources and said, yeah, we'll do it. And that's because come hell or high water, we would have done it. We would have figured it out no matter what. We're smart, we're savvy, we're resourceful. Push came to shove, we would have given them their money back before, you know, having some sort of awful blow up. So there is a massive role for honesty and integrity in this. And when we talk about honesty, I want to be clear, that doesn't always mean outright telling the truth. In fact, sometimes that's the most harmful thing to do. there's a great quote from a CEO in the book that says, you know, imagine if you're flying in a plane and the pilots come over the intercom and they say, well, folks, we've never seen storm clouds like that before. So please put on your seatbelts and buckle up. You know, we're not quite sure if we're going to be able to get through this or not. Is that honest? Yes. Is it helpful? No. Right. So there are situations in which you probably don't want to be brutally honest. And for entrepreneurs in particular, and I work with many of them month after month, helping them build their own multi-million dollar companies, honesty comes in two flavors. Either people are delusional and they're making promises that they can't keep because they're not as smart as they think they are, in which case humility is in order and there's an honesty there. Or what I mostly find, Ashley, is that entrepreneurs actually aren't confident enough in their own abilities. They could do it. They could stretch and make themselves successful, but they've told themselves through their own self-limiting beliefs that they're not good enough or worthy, or they don't deserve to be wealthy, or they don't deserve to have good clients. That is a type of dishonesty as well. So, you know, for me now as a business coach, pulling entrepreneurs together month after month, I'm always watching for how and where entrepreneurs are honest and dishonest with themselves. Where have their assumptions come and gotten in the way? So now I actually run a group called Forum. Every month we come together on Zoom. It's about a 2-hour call. It's 100% confidential. And the whole idea is to get extremely vulnerable about what's really, really, really going on in our life. The things that we can't share at networking events and we can't share with our family and sometimes even spouses, you know, but they're in the backs of our minds preventing us from moving forwards, these sort of internal blockers, these self-limiting beliefs. I have, you know, again, right, come out of college of all these business courses, no one told me that, you know, one of my quotes I go to every time is entrepreneurship is 10% about business, 100% about people, and 1,000% about the self. Now, no, I wasn't a math major, but I can tell you that math checks out every time. That's the part about entrepreneurship no one teaches in business school, and it's the part that I'm now most passionate about.
And I think it's important too, and it kind of relates to mindset as well. I mean, I know when I was first starting my business, I had no idea how much of a role mindset played in the basically starting and growing a business from there. So it's really important to be able to focus on things like that, because it's not just about having the strategy aspect down, it's other things too.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And you know, what's so interesting is that you know, people in jobs, all they want is to be their own boss. And I like to remind them that entrepreneurship means freedom. It means you get to wake up in the morning and decide of the 1,000 things you can do, what should you do? Now, the downside is, as an entrepreneur, you have freedom. When you wake up in the morning, you have to decide which of the 1,000 things you could do you should be doing. That is extremely difficult. And for a lot of the entrepreneurs I coach, it can be downright debilitating. When you can do everything, when you don't have a boss making it very clear that this is the goal, this is the objective, go and do it, that clarity is a tremendous asset. And so when you have entrepreneurs that aren't quite clear because there's so much optionality, that can actually be really, really difficult and harmful. And so people get stuck, and it's easy to understand why. The value, the potential upside of getting unstuck, you know, just by having the right mentor or coach is invaluable. And this is something that 25-year-old Peter would never have believed. You know, it took me turning 30, having a quarter life crisis because I'm going to live to 120, realizing I hadn't done enough with my life, and having to go and find a group of entrepreneurs, my own forum that I still attend, you know, people who illuminated for me the simplest questions, like, I heard you say that, you know, you wanted to go and sell these types of accounts, so why don't you just do it? Oh, well, I can't. What do you mean you can't? Well, I mean, I don't know if they're going to want what I'm selling. What do you mean? You know, what do you mean by that? I don't know if I'm quite confident enough. What do you mean by that? Well, what I mean is I'm afraid that people are going to tell me no, and I'm going to take no personally. That's the issue, right? So getting to that issue is so super critical. And that's thus the entrepreneurship being 1,000% about the self, because self-awareness, the recognition that there could even be levels and layers of difficulty, of challenges that you're dealing with outside of the business and what you can see on the surface, that self-awareness is a massive step one to helping yourself be a successful entrepreneur.
Love it, love it, love it. And now, Peter, what was the most difficult part you would say about starting your business while young?
You know, I don't know that I found it all that difficult. I'll tell you what, Ashley, I find it more difficult now. I think ignorance was bliss back then. You know, I just sort of dove into it. I didn't expect to have money or free time or any of those things in my young 20s. So I had a tremendous amount of zeal. Looking back on it, the thing I should have seen is, and the question I should have asked is, how do I be much more strategic about the type of business I even want to start? Like, if someone had, you know, I ended up getting an MBA at Columbia, right? Probably should have done that first, because like that taught me, how do you even value a business? What kinds of businesses are valuable? How do you establish defensible cash flows? And like all of these business concepts that now when I look back, I'm like, it's very clear I didn't know any of that. Because if I had, I never would have started that type of business. I never would have started it that way. I never would have picked those customers. I never would have picked that solution to provide them. Never would have charged what I charged. I mean, just the whole foundation of the business, I wouldn't have done it that way had I known better. So at the time, you know, like I said, I think ignorance was bliss. Now I'm much more, I literally have like a list of criteria it takes for me to start or invest in a business, because I'm just a lot more clued in to what it takes to grow something of value.
Yeah, which is important to keep in mind regardless of what type of business or industry you're going in.
Yeah, absolutely.
On the flip side of that, what would you say was the most rewarding part of starting your business while young?
You don't start multiple businesses and then do a TED Talk and write a book without a massive ego like mine. So I mean, being a business owner is in my DNA. You know, I am I own that type of person. And I think, you know, back to getting into honest alignment, folks out there who are starting a business, who are afraid or unsure or uncertain, look into your soul. You know, are you the boss? Do you own that stuff? Because if you do, let all the other emotions and uncertainty go. They're not helpful. You're being who you are. That's it. That's the only responsibility I think we have as human beings. So if you're not though, if you're like, you know what, this lack of clarity, it's not for me. This lack of direction, not for me. Then get out of it. There's no shame in saying, you know what, I just want someone to tell me what to do. And I want to invest in my 401k and have consistency and stability in my life. I think that's actually a wonderful thing. I mean, I actually applaud people who get out of the entrepreneurship game because they recognize in themselves that's not who they are. I'm a big fan of helping people get into honest alignment, because if you're out of alignment, it's kind of like driving a car that's out of alignment. It's just going to produce daily pain.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point too. And especially with going along with that, I mean, the different emotions that people face with owning a business and not feeling confident enough in their capabilities or feeling afraid and stuff like that, I found that when you face those feelings, you end up attracting the wrong people. So it's like when you doubt yourself, you end up attracting the wrong clients and customers that don't align at all with who you'd ideally like to be working with. But once you kind of get past those emotions and push them to the side, that's when you get closer and closer to working with the quote unquote dream clients that everyone talks about, and being able to work with people that you thoroughly enjoy working with.
Yeah, you're 100% right. That is a mindset and belief in and of itself. You know, there are better clients out there. And let me tell you, there are also a tremendous amount of bad clients out there. I mean, I take a little bit of issue with, you know, the social media gurus with their rented Ferraris saying, you know, you can land your dream client that pays you $100,000 a month and one phone call from your pajamas at home. I mean, you know, I think that we need a little bit more realism about, you know, what it takes to build a business full of those types of clients. And listen, I've worked with, again, startups to the Fortune 500s. And what makes a good client is really in the personality of the leadership. And if you can find companies you admire whose leaders don't have their heads up their butts, then you can actually have a really good time and do great work together. The problem is, it's really hard to find. It's really not easy to find. And the thing I find is that people who end up in authority positions, we have to understand like what makes people successful and what does success and failure do to people. Failure teaches. Failure makes people humble. Failure makes people better listeners and more aware. Success does none of those things. If you have someone who just breaks through ranks, starts at the bottom and ends up as the CEO, sometimes they're rock stars, and that's awesome. But other times, they have been elevated to a point where they think, well, what got me here must be the right thing, so I'm going to cling to my way of being because obviously it works. And that can be really, really dangerous. And I've seen a lot of people in authority get to a place of authority and assume that everything they think and feel and do is correct, and they shut down listening to anything else. So when the market shifts, or when they hire people smarter than they are, which by the way is always a good idea, they don't listen and they don't pivot. And so they drift into oblivion. One of the first stories I tell in my book is the story of Netflix and Blockbuster. And this is exactly what happened to Blockbuster.
Oh, that's a good one.
You know, they were like, hey, our business model obviously works. Look how many years people have come in and bought their tapes. Like, this is a great idea. We make all our money on late fees. People love paying late fees, right? Wrong. And so when the market shifted, they had years. You know, some people don't realize they had years of knowing about Netflix, meeting with Reed Hastings. They even at one point started Total Access, their own Netflix, where they were renting DVDs through the mail. They were up to like 2 million subscribers. And then Carl Icahn, who's an activist investor that has done a lot of great things, came in and shut it down, fired the CEO, installed a new CEO, and said, no, this is not how this company makes money. We're going back to what works. Well, they went back to what worked past tense, and it didn't work going forward. And you know the rest of the story. They went from an $8.4 billion valuation to about a $100 million valuation. Meanwhile, Netflix is 20-something, 30-something times more valuable than Blockbuster ever was at this point.
Yeah, so it's all about being able to identify when you need to shift and actually doing it in order to keep pivoting and moving forward.
Just being open-minded, you know, get to the root of, you know, okay, let's actually investigate this thing. How do we know where, like, these are the two questions I want everyone to ask of everything they do, personal life, professional life, doesn't matter. Is that true? And how do you know? You know, Netflix is growing. People seem to want that model. Is that true? And how can we test it out? How can we know? If they had just asked that and remained open-minded to what could be, where the future was going, we would be talking about Blockbuster instead of Netflix.
100%. So Peter, what do you think led you to your success?
I don't think I'm successful. That's step one, right? So I think a lot of the folks in my circle, if you ask that question, they would think the same thing. They'd be like, I don't know, what's success? I mean, what is that really? It's a feeling. And I have to say, you know, I'm 34 now, you know, after my turning 30 crisis, which for the young 20-year-olds, they're laughing at me. They're like, who the heck goes through a quarter life crisis at 30? Just you wait. I was one of those people. I thought it would never happen. So now that I went through that, I really have restructured my life and my companies to get into honest alignment. You know, the type of lifestyle that makes me happy, the type of day, the projects, the activities. I mean, being on a podcast talking to you, like, this is in perfect alignment with who I am and what I want to be doing. So the question is, how do all of you out there put yourself into a situation where you can spend your time the way you want to spend it? Do projects that you care about. That to me is the goal. You know, so right. I don't think of success as most people do, like, you know, money or, you know, the house or whatever. I think of it in terms of how do you spend your time. And so for that one thing, Ashley, I'll say I've done a much better job. And the reason I've been able to do a better job is because I realized that I have full control over the way I spend my time and the people I surround myself with and the projects I do. I think if the pandemic has taught us anything, it's that there are many things we don't have control over, but the things you do, go ahead and take control.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel the same exact way. Being here in Massachusetts, one of my favorite thing to do in the summer is to take Fridays off and go to the beach. And so that is like the most important thing to me is just having control over how I spend my time. And that's how I determine my happiness with my life and business as well. So I love that you touched upon that.
Yep. Beach Fridays. That is success.
Yeah, exactly. So throughout the past decade plus of you being a business owner, if there was one thing you wish you did differently or one thing you know now that you wish you knew then, what would it be and why?
I wish I knew much more about like how to set up the right business foundation. That the majority of work I do with entrepreneurs now is mindset and fundamentals. And by that, I mean like, okay, you've built business X. How's that going for you? Well, I don't know, Peter. I work 80 hours a week and I barely make any money and I hate my employees. And so it's like, okay, well, now let's be much more strategic. If we could create this business from scratch to the lifestyle you want, then what would it look like? And I basically rebuild a much more profitable business that completely aligns with the entrepreneur's lifestyle and so on and so forth. That's the goal. And that's completely available to us if we just admit to ourselves that it's possible. And I had to learn not only that it was possible, but what those things even were, right? So I think that's only something, Ashley, that experience can teach. Like now I can spin up a company in a day because I have, you know, web development teams, phone outreach teams, email outreach teams. I have a global network of businesses and resources that I can just go. And that's why, for any of you out there that are trying to do this alone, why would you do that? I mean, the faster you get a mentor or a coach who has all those resources, my goodness, I mean, you can move so quickly. I mean, to grow a $1 million company with the right direction is not that difficult. It's all of the toiling in the mud that takes the time. And if you just pick your head up and stand up, there's a whole world out here that you can access. You just have to be brave enough to stand up and raise your hand.
Yeah. And I think you're exactly right. I mean, being able to set that foundation is what will help you to bring your business to that level and surround you with the people who will help you get there.
Yeah. I mean, not every business is designed to go to $1 million. Some can't. Like they literally, the way the business is set up, it's just not a business that can do that. And I don't think that's what a lot of founders realize in the beginning.
Yeah. And I think that's a good point. And so kind of remembering that too, are you the type of person who likes to suggest that people kind of have that 5-year plan when it comes to having that business foundation of thinking about where they want to be 5-10 years down the line and creating those steps that help them get there?
So I'm a big fan of long-term personal planning. Like I want people to be thinking about what does my life look like in 10 or 15 years? But when it comes to business, I actually don't like going out that far. I want people focused on like, what can I do between 12 and 24 months? And even that I think is a stretch. And the reason is because things change so fast. I mean, if I took a look at my life, my business in 5-year snapshots, they're so completely wildly different that I couldn't have even planned for it anyway. And I, you know, unless you get lucky and you settle into the kind of business that's going to be, you know, $100 million exit. And that does happen. Takes a lot of luck, by the way. That's something where you settle in, you ride it. Most entrepreneurs aren't on that track. You know, most are in some other place on the curve of, you know, $1 billion business to I created a $100,000 a year job for myself. And so for them, because things will change so much, because technology is changing so much and the world's changing so much, I just don't think it's valuable to go that far out for business planning purposes.
Yeah. And it's actually funny because I was speaking to a client last week and what you said reminded me exactly of what she said. She said, anyone who asked the question 5 years ago or answered the question 5 years ago, where do you see yourself in 5 years, got it completely wrong now because of the way that 2020 is going. Totally. So it's like, yeah, you can't take into consideration what can happen because you just don't know. And it's exactly right, like what you're talking about earlier. There are things you can't control and things that you can.
That's absolutely right.
So going along with that, why do you think it's so important for individuals to start a business at a young age specifically?
There's no better teacher. There's no better place to learn about the world and how the world works, to learn about yourself and how you work. it's just, I mean, I wish entrepreneurship on everyone. I think it's a mindset and state of being and pursuit of lifelong learning that you can't get anywhere else. It's just not possible. It only by throwing yourself into such a personal struggle to figure out how to generate sales. And you think about it, you have to be a master at everything, right? It's like branding, sales, marketing, operations, finance. You have to learn about all of it. So, you know, what I've learned in entrepreneurship compared to what I've learned in college, I mean, forget about it. It's not even remotely the same.
Agreed. And that's exactly right too. I mean, you just learn so many different things while you're young that you have to kind of dabble into everything in order to figure out what you need to do to move forward. And it's almost like the idea of you don't know what you don't know. And so you kind of have to really be able to be willing to take a look into everything and try it for yourself and learn to keep going forward.
Exactly.
So Peter, this has been an awesome episode that I know so many people will find to be really beneficial. But if there was one last piece of advice that you could share with our listeners, what would it be?
Stop worrying.
I think that's a good one. People tend to think too much about what they're doing and why they're doing it and how it's going to turn out that I think it's kind of numbing and prevents people from moving forward.
Totally. And there's just, you know, as my business partner always says, worry doesn't solve anything. So just drop it. Just keep doing your thing. Keep moving forward. You don't have the answers. I don't have the answers. Ashley doesn't have the, like, yeah. Nobody knows, right? Like, did we know the zombie apocalypse was coming in 2020? No, but you know, we're still going to keep moving forward. So that's really all we can do.
Love it. Now, Peter, I'd love if you could share where our listeners can find you in case they'd like to connect with you further.
Absolutely. So come have an honest conversation at honesttogreatness.com. That's honesttogreatness.com. You can take the 21 question honesty quiz, which will tell you how honest of a leader you really are if you're brave enough to find out. I'm on all the social channels. I'm like the worst millennial ever. I don't like social media, but I'm there and I contribute. And please, for those of you listening, I have a very special page set up for entrepreneurs. If you go to petercozodoy.com/bonus, so it's Peter, KOZODOY/bonus, I'm giving away entrepreneurship classes that I've taught in the past, free one-on-one mentor sessions, membership and forum, tickets to my summit. I'm offering a bunch of stuff for people who buy multiple copies of my book, Honest to Greatness. So if you're an entrepreneur, that is a fantastic way to get a ton of value.
Perfect. And I'll put all those links in the show notes too. So that way, if anyone missed them as you were saying them, they'll be able to click through from there.
Awesome.
Thanks so much again, Peter, for being a guest today.
It's my pleasure, Ashley. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for listening today. I'd love it if you could subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with those who could use it most. For show notes and more information, go to studenttoceo.com/podcast.